Hi, everybody. Welcome to another AAPMD webinar. And really excited tonight. You know, airway is truly a worldwide global issue. And to prove it tonight, we have a very special guest from Australia. 12 hours. We're starting our evening, she's starting her morning. And we're here with our co-host from the Endeavor Group, which is the pediatric section of the AAPMD, Pat McBride, and Steve Carstensen, who just came back from the AGAD meeting. And so we're looking forward to a really great webinar. I'm getting dinged by all these people who say they can't get on the webinar. You're very popular, Shireem. You've attracted a lot of wonderful people. In our Endeavor webinars, we try to give everybody a different perspective on how to treat kids. Shireen's going to give her perspective. She has a practice. She practices with her husband in what part of Australia?
Perth, Western Australia.
Yeah. And we have a chat box and we have a question box. And Pat and Steve and I will monitor the chats and the questions. We're going to save our questions until the end so that Shireem can go through a presentation. We had a little bit of a glitch loading her video, but I'm going to be able to show it for you later. Just company attractions, 2 days. We have the PT section of AAPMD with Louise Kelly, a physical therapist and a graduate of the Posture Restoration Institute. And a week from Wednesday, we have a webinar about misinformation about cone beams. There was an article about orthodontic cancer by using too many cone beams. And so we're looking at the... Let me just turn off my notifications. There is a lot of issues about should are too many cone beams being taken, but there is so much fantastic information that you can only get with cone beam, and that you really can end up saving somebody's life by what you see on a cone beam. And you're going to see a couple of those cases in the presentation on the 23rd. And on the 30th, we have a presentation, a webinar from the Liaison Group, which is going to be great. And then we have a couple of really interesting webinars coming up in July. And there are others that we're trying to find a place for them because we're rapidly approaching the September conference. And you're looking at our two sterling program chairman who've created a fantastic program. We've extended the early registration to June 30th, give everybody a chance to take advantage of the reduced rates. People are beginning to register. The world is open. We look forward to seeing you in Atlanta in September, September 23rd to 26th. Remember, we have now have 110, I think, webinars in our library. If you're an AAPMD member, it's free. If you're not, it's $35 per session. It's an incredible bargain. I think we have, Patty said, 120 new members in the AAPMD since January. So it was 197 last year and 120 this year. We're doing great. Pat or Steve, want to say something now, or should we wait till the end? We'll talk about the conference, and then so let's just go and let Shireem present. And Pat, will you do the honors in introducing our wonderful guest for tonight?
Sure, happy to. excuse me, just one second here. I had it up and now it went away. So welcome, Shireem. We're very happy to have you here to speak today. And It's been an absolute delight working with you on the Endeavor section. And for those of you who don't know Green, she's a general dentist with a graduate diploma in dental sleep medicine from Perth, Western Australia. She has been involved in dental sleep medicine for about 8 years and is really passionate about advancing new standards of care and has been super active in organizing national interdisciplinary airway and tongue tie conferences to promote a greater discussion and integration amongst specialties who treat adults and children in our field and to get them the best care that they can offer. So we don't want to take any time away from your presentation, Shireen. Just go ahead. And when you need us to run your video, we will.
Before we start, there's a lot of feedback coming from one of us. It might be from your microphone, Shireen.
Sure.
There's a lot of background noise. Yeah.
Go ahead, talk. Let's see what happens.
All right. Okay, so hi, everyone. My name's Shireen, and I'm a general dentist from Perth in Western Australia. Is the feedback there? Are we all good?
Okay, so far.
It's good now. Go ahead.
That's great. So I really am grateful to the Endeavor Group for the invitation to speak today. I think I can't control the slides at the moment. Can you? Hello, is anyone there?
Sure. Howie can control the slides.
Yeah. Okay. So if we could just start from the beginning. All right, perfect. Thank you. So today I'm going to share a little bit about my perspective on tongue ties and the impact on airway development and airway function. Right. So I first started getting into dental sleep medicine around 2011 because of my husband's snoring. It was driving me pretty crazy and I was super frustrated. So one day I actually woke up and started Googling a little bit about dental appliances because I was aware that they could help people reduce snoring. And I decided to learn more and more. It was a very frustrating problem and I wanted to be able to help other spouses get a better night's sleep. And that's when I became one of the first dentists to enroll in the graduate diploma in dental sleep medicine through our local university. And so I began to see adult snoring and sleep apnea patients. And what I soon discovered that it is more than a noise in the bedroom. A lot of these patients have significant problems with their daily function. So common complaints are brain fog, difficulties accessing their full mental capacity, depression, anxiety, lots of health problems, and they just really can't get through their day very easily. So what I also started to think was these mandibular advancement devices that we're providing for adults, they're a very band-aid solution. So when we get a referral for one of these appliances, they're usually a non-obese patient, and it is a craniofacial problem. So we know that the high arch palate is a risk factor, and so is the retrognathic mandible. And so it really got me thinking because these things, they provide people a much better night's sleep. What I'm finding is that people can sleep better, they're more rested, they put on more weight, their mood is easier, and then you never see them again until something goes wrong. It's broken, they need a repair, and then they can't live without it. And so I just wondered, why are we using such a band-aid solution? Can we do anything earlier? And we know in dental school we were taught that we can do growth modification around the age of 7 to 8 years. And what I was finding is that every time we were sending a patient for orthodontic consult, the common issue was to wait and monitor. And then sure enough, we'd get the request to do extraction of teeth at a later stage. And because I had young children at that time, I didn't want my children to have to go down that path. And so what I decided was having been exposed to Dr. Christian Gimeno's research on palate expansion and the improvements in OSA and breathing, I wanted to be able to learn more about how to do this and so ensure that my children were not going to get their teeth removed. And so that's how I became involved in early interceptive orthodontics and learning more about that. And then I went to another conference where I heard Dr. Herman Ramirez say that the number one most modifiable factor that can influence mandibular development is breastfeeding in the first year of life. And so that really excited me, because here we are making these appliances that move people's lower jaw forward. What if we could act in that first year of life? And so that's what really got me interested in breastfeeding advocacy and tongue tie release, because I know that these tongue ties can be a common reason for cessation, early cessation of breastfeeding. And so that's how I ended up becoming involved in tongue ties. And I know a lot of people that are involved in early interceptive treatment, they've got in because of their children or seeing things with their infant phrenectomies and they want to learn more. But really, I got in because of the adults and all the despair that I see in them, and how can we prevent those issues. And so at the moment, my practice is really restricted to tongue tie management from infancy through to adulthood. I do early interceptive orthodontics, and I'm also involved in mandibular advancement devices for adults. So I'm going to start with a common adult scenario that I see in the practice, and it really could be anyone. But this is Kelly. She's a 33-year-old lady. She has snoring. Her partner's been moved out of her room. She's got witness apneas. She's unrefreshed and waking. She's in a constant state of tiredness and brain fog. She's prone to throbbing headaches once a week. She has chronic neck tension, and she struggles to breathe through her nose. Her ENT has checked her airways and scans and advised that her nasal airway is clear. So really the reason why she's come to me is because she's struggling to breathe through her nose. And she actually read on the internet that myofunctional therapy could be helpful to address mouth breathing. So what she read was that if you put your tongue to the palate or suction, that's going to help open up your airway, breathe clearer. And sure enough, she did find that once she started doing that, she could actually feel her airway improve. However, it also triggered migraine headaches, and she was unable to continue. And so that's why she came to me. And so we sent her for a sleep study, and it found out that she had severe sleep apnea, AHI of 33. So also in her history, her mum reports breastfeeding was painful, and she snored from a very early age. She had a deterioration around the age of 14 years with extractions and orthodontic treatment to address her dental overcrowding. She had OSA first diagnosed in her 20s, and she didn't want to go on CPAP. So she was advised to go on Ritalin to manage some of her daytime symptoms, except that was something that she chose not to do. So when I look at Kelly, what I'm seeing is this forward head posture, open mouth posture, all compensations of a restricted airway. And when I look at her palate, what we can see, it's a very tapered, narrow, high arch palate. She's had premolars removed, so it's all being constricted. She also has a tongue tie, and you can see in this dorsal dimpling, her tongue can't lift. And to lift it, she requires excessive recruitment of her neck muscles. So she has these migraines and headaches. And what we can see is very commonly, people can function quite okay throughout their life with a tongue tie. This is a more hidden tongue tie, and the reason why he's able to function okay is because it's he's using his neck excessively. And so we know that when you recruit your neck, often there may be trigger points that develop in those muscles, and sometimes they can lead to referred pain and headaches. And so for this particular patient, we did the tongue tie release and myofunctional therapy, and it resolved those headaches. And so what I know is for Kelly is if I can do my functional therapy and release that tongue tie, it's going to help free up her neck and release some of these headaches and migraines that she's having. But on the other hand, I know she has severe sleep apnea. And doing a tongue tie release is very likened to releasing a 6-foot tiger into a 3-foot cage. That's an analogy provided by Dr. Felix Liao. It's releasing this tongue into this too small an area, and it's going to create a lot of stress and potentially aggravate her breathing disorder. Can you hear that? My phone never rings, but home phone. Anyway, so with Kelly, we have missed the boat to develop her palate, and she doesn't have sufficient room inside her mouth for her tongue. And I know that I can help with this problem with the neck, but the other problem is the breathing issue. So what I've decided to do for her is I have suggested, why don't we do this mandibular advancement device to help with your sleep quality in the biggest way that we can at first, and then we can consider doing a bit of myofunctional therapy and doing some sort of partial tongue tie release, because I know that's going to help with her neck symptoms. So she actually did wear the mandibular advancement splint for a few days and found that it was incredible. She had never known what it felt like to have good sleep, and she felt like her brain was filing away information. But then what happened is she got some residual neck tension and she was unable to continue wearing it. And she's described to me that she's really struggling mentally, physically, emotionally. She doesn't want to do the tongue tie release at this point, but I know that she will come in due time. So what I want to emphasize with these adult patients is a lot of the time we can't do everything that we want, and they not necessarily want to go ahead with surgery, and their lives are suffering. And so we really had a lot of clues early on that we could have intervened. And so now the rest of the presentation, I'm going to talk about those missed opportunities in terms of the tongue tie intervention and looking at her narrow high arch palate. So when we have a narrow high arch palate, we're talking about a narrow nasal floor and a reduced cross-sectional area of the nasal airway. And this leads to increased resistance in nasal airflow. And sticking with the theme of adults, there was a Dr. Stanley Liu and his team at Stanford Medical Center. They did a retrospective review of 89 patients that had nasal surgery. And they found 52 patients had persistent nasal obstruction and 37 had resolution of their symptoms. So persistent nasal obstruction was associated with narrow high arch palate. So they suggested that patients with persistent nasal obstruction after their surgeries may benefit from additional skeletal remodeling, such as maxillary expansion. And previously, it wasn't thought possible to do this in adults due to the fusion of the sutures. But we now know that when we use these mini implants, that expansion device can actually be allow expansion forces to be placed directly across the midline suture. And we can get this destruction osteogenesis or true remodeling of the nasal floor. So their protocol at Stanford is to introduce the Lafort 1 osteotomy, which actually releases the resistance to expansion from the zygomatic buttress of bone. And it actually minimizes the forces required to separate the suture, and these forces would otherwise have been transmitted higher into the cranial structures. And so in terms of palate expansion for adults, we know that this is actually so far the most well-supported in the literature in terms of reducing nasal congestion and also alleviating OSA. For example, this is one case series of 75 adult patients with OSA, and there was significant reduction in nasal congestion and improvements in OSA. So one of the mechanisms that having improved nasal width is helpful to reduce OSA is that reduced nasal resistance, it requires less effort to breathe during inspiration. So that actually really reduces the collapsibility of the pharynx. So apart from the improvements that we're going to get in terms of nasal ventilation and reduced collapsibility, we also have room for the tongue to posture properly when we do palate expansion. We have greater tongue to palate contact. And if we look at it from a different perspective, we can actually see that there's higher tongue posture is associated with less chance of encroachment of the base of the tongue in the pharyngeal airway space. And so this is a nice paper published by Dr. Eric Fuller in ENT from Brazil this year. What he did was he took 66 obstructive sleep apnea patients who needed to have an alternative to CPAP. Some of these patients had persistent obstructive sleep apnea after MMA surgery, double jaw advancement, which we know is the most effective sleep surgery. And what he actually found during drug-induced sleep, he was looking at where are the patterns of collapse. And he found that if you had an intermolar width of 29.8 millimeters, it was a cutoff point at which we would expect that there was a 95% chance of the tongue base obstructing during sleep. And then if the intermolar width was 27.5% millimeters, we would predict that the soft palate and the lateral walls of the pharynx would all collapse at the same time. And so what these results suggest is that maxillary expansion may be critical to improve the success of the soft tissue, upper airway stimulation, and MMA surgeries. because what it's doing, it's making more support for all the soft tissues and more support for the tongue, more room for the tongue. So in terms of adult snoring and sleep apnea, I think one of the most important speakers around this that has really guided me is Dr. Stanley Liu. He's been doing he's a full scope sleep surgeon. So what that means is he does all the ENT surgeries. He does the skeletal surgery, such as the MMA, as well as being one of the pioneers of the dome technique, and also upper airway stimulation. And what his suggestion is that it is critical, maxillary expansion, it is critical to the success of all other surgeries and reducing relapse. And so he's a good friend of mine, but I'm also somewhat of a professional groupie. And over the years, I've made sure that I can attend and listen to him at every opportunity. I know when I first heard him, he was just starting to do this dome on the advice of Dr. Christian Gimeno. But every time I hear him more and more, I can understand he truly values the importance of this intervention. So this lecture that he provided, maxillary expansion as the foundation for sleep disordered breathing, was a lecture that he recently gave at an ENT conference. And I was also invited to speak at that conference. Now, normally he's such an engaging speaker, he's not someone that you would normally want to speak after, but in this instance, he's also a very passionate advocate of early intervention. And so this is why I was quite happy to speak after him. He had really opened people's minds to it. And I do think this is where the future of adult OSA management is, to not ignore this high arch palate phenotype. It really helps to address the root issue and help resolve the situation. So we know palate expansion in children is a lot easier and really well supported in the literature. We know that there are consistent improvements in AHI for obstructive sleep apnea children, and also it's well supported as an adjunct post-adenotonsillectomy for children who have a narrow palate. And it's not necessarily waiting for children to have OSA, it is a good adjunct to address impaired nasal breathing. We don't need to wait until a child has a crossbite. If they're having a breathing issue, whether they have allergies or other issues, we can actually consider palate expansion for functional reasons. So I'm going to start with share a 6.5-year-old patient that I've done that palate expansion for. The reason she's come in, she's had speech therapy fortnightly for 3 years, not much progress. She has behavioral concerns and she's seeing a psychologist for ADHD diagnosis. She has had her adenoids and tonsils removed at 2 to 3 years old, which has helped reduce restlessness, but not speech. She's concerned with persistent mouth breathing. Her parents report daily tantrums and she's a monster after school. And her parents have been everywhere and they think somehow it's all related to a problem with the size of her tongue and she wants an orthodontic opinion. So this is a work in progress. It's approximately 8 months, which is a little bit longer than I have wanted to do, but she is a regional patient, so not coming in that often. And at this moment, I'm at the point of giving her a new expander because the screws reached the end of the limit. But even so, within the first few weeks, her parents reported she's closing her mouth more, her tongue is fitting better, she's getting more solid sleep, so she's sleeping until 7 a.m., versus 5 a.m. She's less tantrums and she's speaking clearer, despite initial concerns that the expander would actually make her speech worse. So I've deliberately chosen a very gutter palette here to show you, just so that you can see what's going on. But I think that anytime a child's mouth is too narrow for their tongue, we need to consider the option of expansion because we're going to get fairly consistent improvements in their sleep and breathing. Now, the other question, this video is not working, but this mum, that basically the other question that people want to know is, should I do expansion first or should I do ENT first? And so this mum brought in this video of her child snoring. She's concerned about headaches, tiredness all the time, dark circles under her eyes, speech issues. And so she showed me this video. And I know that she needs an ENT assessment, but she also needs to have palate expansion. So my idea was, let's do the pelvic expansion scans and you can go and see an ENT, and whatever happens first, she's going to need it both. So what happened is, as it turned out, her ENT appointment was quite quick. So my expander was ready, and then her ENT surgery was booked 2 days after. And so I said, why don't we wear the expander for a couple of days, get it comfortable, we don't have to turn it, and then you can go ahead and put it back in after the surgery. And so that's what we did. And they came back 3 weeks later, approximately 3 weeks after expansion and 3 weeks after the surgery, and her mum was super disappointed. She said nothing has changed. Her other child has had adenotonsillectomy previously, and he was a different kid from day one. He was more energized, he could eat better, but nothing has changed for my daughter. And looking at her, she was still struggling to breathe through her nose, and also her eyes were really watering, so I knew she was having lots of allergies. And so I said to mum, why don't you go back to the ENT when you're there for the review, discuss allergy management, whether you can get some sort of steroid spray, and keep going with the expansion, because I'm pretty certain that there'll be improvements at that time as well. So this is in progress again also. Within the six-week mark, when I saw her the second time, her breathing was quiet. She was able to breathe through her nose more easily. So she's a pretty different kid. And so I know one of the common questions is, do we do lower expansion? And I have to say, I think that it can be very helpful to make the whole process go quicker. But in this case, I haven't actually used it because I know that the lower teeth are tilted in and they will naturally tilt out on their own. So I'm quite comfortable with that. So having seen the improvements that are possible in breathing and sleep, I've started to get more and more comfortable going younger and younger, and also really inspired by my weekly meetings with the other guys from the Endeavor group. So only very recently, I thought I might try some three-year-olds. And this is another 3.5-year-old, and he's got a very gutter palate. But his mum's come in because they've got concerns about his sleep, his speech. He's recently had his adenoids, tonsils out, grommets. And so what I've decided, he's got a tongue tie, but in the first instance, I'd like to address this structural deficit. And so again, this is very, very early progress, only 4 millimeters of expansion to date. But what we can see is that he's actually out of crossbite already. So it's not really necessary for us to wait until they're 6 to 7 to 8 years old. Now, another common question that a lot of people ask is what expander to use. And I've got to say that I really favor this BioBlock stage one appliance. What I really love about it is the control that it gives in terms of the whole arch form. And what we can also see very early is that it's actually created this positive dental overjet, where we have actually unlocked or untrapped the lower jaw. So that's going to be allowed to come forward as well. So that is my favorite appliance. In terms of his tongue tie, yes, he has a tongue tie. The team is taking photos of the feet. That I'm always really interested because I feel there's a link between inward turning feet. I think when we see that the tongue on protrusion deviates to one side, that's also another little red flag for me as well. But my idea at this point is to deal with the palate and the structure first. There was a point where I would have probably gone, let's try some planus technique and do some tongue tie release and myofunctional therapy, and he's young enough and it should be able to develop properly. But I actually perceive a lot of value with the palate expansion and getting that quick win. I'm not going to go through that. So the thing is, we're treating 3.5-year-olds. We can really help them get back on track craniofacially. But the problem that we really don't know is, how is this going to affect his behavior? Because we know that the most critical period for brain development appears to be around this 0 to 3 mark. And we know that if they have sleep disturbed breathing, there may be some persistent deficits in terms of behavior. So, for example, children with mouth breathing, snoring, and sleep apnea peaking around 30 months have a 2 times risk of behavioral problems at the age of 8. So I think we do need to work younger and younger. Now, in 2014, I first met Dr. Christian Gimeneau at our pediatric sleep meeting, and I had the chance to speak to him, and I approached him and let him know that he was very influential on me and what made the person that actually made me want to learn more about interceptive orthodontics. And he said to me, if you're doing palate expansion, you're too late. And I actually had no idea what that meant at that time. And I was pretty confused, and that put me down another rabbit hole. But what I do know now is that there are very, very early clues. If the mouth is not functioning properly, it will not provide the proper stimulation for the jaws to grow properly. So if we look at Jasmine, the girl that had the very gutter palate, what we can see is these are photos from 2 months, 11 months, pre-adenotonsillectomy and post-adenotonsillectomy. And so we can see that there was very early dysfunction that we could have tried to help address early on. And she also has a tongue tie, some sort of posterior tongue tie. And I think that this would impact her sucking and swallowing in utero before she's even born. But now it's been compounded with open mouth, low tongue tone. She was breastfed for 18 months, but she had recurrent mastitis. So I know that she probably wasn't suctioning effectively with her tongue. Dummy, she's used the dummy for 3 years. She's got sleep disordered breathing, problems with chewing and swallowing meat, and tongue thrust affecting speech. So a lot of different clues along the way that we could have actually intervened earlier. So in terms of what do we really want to see with the tongue, we really want to pay very close attention to what it's doing at rest or during sleep, because that's where we spend the most significant amount of time. We want the tongue to be lightly suctioned to the roof of the mouth, where it forms the scaffold for the development of a good maxillary arch. So it actually counteracts the inward pressures of the lips and cheeks. And in this position, it should guide, the tongue and the palate should grow perfectly, very much like the brain and the skull, the eye and the orbit, they should grow together. But if the tongue is lowered for any reason, including mouth breathing, tongue ties or dummies, there's nothing to support the inward pressures of the lips and cheeks. And this is where we get the V-shaped palate. Okay, and then if we look at it from the other perspective, we can see this tongue to palate suction is associated with this broad nasal passage, and the lowered tongue posture is associated with this distortion and this high arch palate, narrow nasal floor. And so what we also know very early on in life is breastfeeding is really important. It's also referred to as nature's palate expander. So during breastfeeding, it is for optimal transfer of milk, it is essential that the tongue can suction to the roof of the mouth. And as it drops, it creates a vacuum, and that's how milk is transferred efficiently. And the nipple is very moldable. It conforms to the shape of the mouth. And so we get this broadening or expansive force to develop the palate. And this is in contrast to a bottle, which is not deformable. It alters the way that the tongue works. It doesn't require as much effort or coordination. And we get these inward pressures of the lips and cheeks that are doing the work rather than the tongue. And so we know that the evidence suggests that if we have breastfeeding, it is protective against malocclusion. But the bigger picture is it is actually coordinating our muscles, our proper tongue suction and strength, and all the muscles working properly, as well as being the proper stimulus for jaw development. So that's really why I got interested in tongue ties. I wanted to be able to help people breastfeed for longer, because we understand that common reasons for early cessation of breastfeeding include pain and the perception of poor milk supply and poor latch. So if we look at these diagrams, for instance, on the right-hand side, what we can see is that tongue is restricted from elevation. Yeah. And so what that means is that the tongue can't create effective suction. So it may mean that a baby is more tired easily on the breast. They require short, frequent feeds. Maybe that they transfer milk less efficiently. Mum might have mastitis, or it may be perceived as low milk supply. They may click as they lose suction, which introduces air. And so there's a whole host of symptoms that may occur because of this lack of effective suction. The other thing that can occur with a tongue tie is that the tongue is not able to extend over the lower alveolar ridge, which creates this gumming or trauma or nipple pain as well. So So in terms of breastfeeding, what we want to look at is not just how well is a baby putting on weight or the absence of pain. We want to actually ensure that the tongue is functioning well during suction, because that's really the foundation for good tongue function during speech and chewing and swallowing and breathing. And so these are some of the other clues that we want to look for. Like, we want to look for this milk remnant, which is a sign that the tongue is not clearing the palate, or even these two-tone lips or lip calcium, which is a sign that there may be a more shallow latch and the baby is compensating to create the vacuum with their mouth. We look for these other signs of cupping and dimpling, which again indicate that a child may not be getting good suction. And so if we don't address these tongue ties, we know that there may be other issues later down the track. So this is around 2016, I think. It was a paper published by Dr. Christian Gimeneau. And what they did was they looked at children who were coming into a sleep clinic with snoring and sleep disordered breathing. And they found that in addition to children that have enlarged adenoids and tonsils, the other thing that we need to be aware of is children that have a tongue tie or shortened lingual frenulum. And in general, those children with a shortened lingual frenulum are going to have a much more narrow palate. And this is thought to be the result of the poor stimulation of that palate development. And so this statistical association was quite strong, and it was decided there needed to be more research into this area. And so this led to the validation of a screening tool so that we can actually measure tongue mobility. So many of you will be familiar with this tongue range of motion ratio, which has a normal distribution. We can find out what is normal and be able to classify people into different grades according to where they fall in that distribution. And so using this ratio, these researchers were able to do more research. And this was Audrey Yoon's private practice. They did 302 consecutive patients in her orthodontic clinic. And they found that if you had a grade 3 or 4 or the lowered mobility of the tip of the tongue, it was associated with narrowing of the maxillary arch and soft palate elongation, both risk factors for sleep disordered breathing. And so what this study demonstrates is there seems to be an association between tongue tie and narrow palate, but it doesn't prove causation. So that does not mean that just because we release a tongue tie that we're going to get palate development. And if we really want to understand when it might be helpful for palate development, we have to understand myofunctional therapy. So the ultimate goal for the tongue really is to rest lightly suctioned to the roof of the mouth, where it becomes impossible to mouth breathe. Mechanically, the mouth is closed and the airflow through the nose down the throat is very laminar. And this tongue in this position means the tongue is sufficiently toned to serve its most important function as an upper airway dilator muscle. But if we look at a tongue that is sitting low, or if there is a posterior tongue tie that restricts the back of the tongue's motion, what that means is that the tongue becomes disused and flaccid, and it's more likely to collapse into the airway during sleep. So myofunctional therapy is a way to help restore that optimal tongue posture. And it involves exercises to improve the tone, endurance, and coordination of the muscles of the upper airway or throat. The goals include restoring normal tongue to palate contact at rest, establishing lip seal, continuous nasal breathing, and normalizing swallowing, chewing, speech. We know that the evidence suggests that it's an effective adjunct to other treatments such as ENT surgery and palate expansion to reduce the apnea hypopnea index. And I believe that it's going to be even more important to restore proper tongue space through expansion and eliminating tongue ties, which are going to inhibit the ability of the tongue to do these exercises. And if we address both the palate and tongue ties, I think we can do better with the outcomes. And if we understand that this tongue to palate suction is really important, we need to pay closer attention to posterior tongue mobility. So this is a validation study by Dr. Surushagi, looking at tongue range of motion ratio when the tongue and the palate is, the tongue is lightly suctioned to the palate. So have a read of this one. I'm not going to go through it, but I do think that posterior tongue tie is important to look at in terms of breathing. The other thing that we need to be aware of is what are the compensations, because it's okay for patients to move their tongue and do that suction, but do they have to use their jaw to support it, or are they recruiting the muscles of the neck? Because if this is the case, the tongue is actually not strong enough to do this during sleep to serve properly its function. And so when a patient comes into the practice, I know a lot of people, they comment that it's really hard to have these discussions with patients in such a quick time. And so what I've really had to do in our practice is just book an hour. When we have a new patient consultation, I just book an hour, then we can spend a lot of time with the patient and ensure that they have everything they need to commit to that treatment most often on the day. And so with what happens is I'm usually getting a lot of photos of their tongue, their teeth, videos of their swallowing and speech. The team's taking care of that, and then I can speak to the parents and run through a functional history. I don't actually have a validated screening tool that I use or anything. There's a bit of a checklist that they fill out before they come in so they can start thinking and knowing what to observe with their child. But then when they come in, I just go through a functional history. We very open-ended to let them discuss and let me know any of their concerns. So we go through all these things. And for instance, it could be something like ear infections or gluey. Are they having those issues? And I'm trying to educate them at the same time, just letting them know if there is a positive, that the reason why I'm asking about this is because it may be impacted by swallowing, and this is the tongue. If the tongue's not working properly, there may be incorrect swallowing. And the patient might go down another line, for instance, saying, oh, my child's balance is a little bit off, and I have a feeling it's something to do with their ears. So we're getting a lot of information. And at the end of the day, what I'm saying is I'm going to spend a lot of time on sleep, because I think that the ultimate function of the tongue is to work properly during sleep to keep the airway open. And so we go through all the different night clues and daytime clues to get more information, because a lot of parents think that if their child is sleeping through the night and not waking up, their child is sleeping well. But I want to help identify things that aren't quite normal, things that aren't quite restful and aren't allowing their child to get the full restorative benefits of sleep. So what I'm going to do now is share one case of my functional therapy. This is a six-year-old in combination with tongue tie release. So looking at her functional history, she was born premature at 35 weeks. She was nasogastric fed for 3 days. She had emergency C-section, torticollis, breastfed for 24 months, but there was slow weight gain. And at 9 months, she was classified as failure to thrive. She had suspected silent reflux, allergies, including asthma, anaphylaxis to nuts and sesame seeds, cat and dog hair. She was nail biting, regular headaches, regular chiro to release her neck tension, audible breathing during sleep, which was linked to her allergies, restlessness during sleep, and tiredness during the day. And so really, this patient has actually presented, their main prompt for making this appointment was sharp teeth. She's getting her lower incisors in, and they're very crooked. They've been for an orthodontic consult, but her mum's recalled there was a tongue tie, and she wants a bit more of a broader or holistic view. And so when I look, I think, okay, she's not sleeping that well. She has a little bit of tonsillar enlargement. I've seen her lateral ceph from her orthodontic consult, and there's no significant adenoidal prominence. So when I ask her to close her mouth, she's able to do that comfortably. So what I'm thinking is I want to do some myofunctional therapy, including tongue tie release, to see what would happen if she can breathe better through her nose. And I have a cute video. I don't know how my videos haven't been working, but this is the one video that I would really love to share, because I picked this child. She's super cute. How can we share this video? Basically, we did some myofunctional therapy. This is her just prior to her tongue tie release. During this time, she's actually had noticed that her headaches have gone with the myofunctional therapy. But my team said, you got to speak to her more because she's so articulate.
So, Shireen, let's see if this works, okay?
Yeah. I can't hear it, so. Oh, that's such a shame. She's gorgeous. I love watching this video.
Just turn it up. It's okay. It's working.
when you say your breathing is better, what does that mean?
Yeah, I'm really struggling to hear this. That's okay, Howie.
Yeah.
One more thing.
Yeah, happy to move on. Happy to move on. Okay. Thanks for trying. But basically, even before the tongue tie release, she's breathing better, sleeping better, more relaxed. She's able to eat better. She's trying new foods, and she's found using the Manchi, it's helping her close her mouth more. So she found that very helpful. So I got some feedback from her 3 weeks post-release, and I'll have to admit this after photo is actually a more recent photo because I did this about 18 months ago. It's a more after photo. But basically what we can see is that she's got less picky eating, now eating meat. She has more energy. She's happier, more confident in her ability. Her chiropractor reports significant release of her neck tension post-release. The patient perceives her neck feels freer. She's more flexible during gymnastics and can move her feet more easily during jazz and dance. And so a lot of these postural things, for people that haven't been involved with tongue tie release, they may not be familiar, but we see a lot of changes in terms of the body as well. She's currently taking antihistamines with the onset of hay fever season, but her mum said it was remarkable that she was able to stop that for a 6 week period during her therapy. And her absence of headaches has persisted. And so we contacted her just a couple of days ago just to check with mum, is it okay if I show the video? And to try and get some feedback, what she took, what she feels was most significant 18 months down the track. And she said that really the biggest thing for her was the big weight gain that occurred after, that her child could actually eat meat and cheese, and all her life she's been struggling and behind on the weight gain. But now she's right on track. The other thing is that she had significant teeth grinding, very, very loud, could be heard from another room, but that is also something that has been eliminated. So they're the standout things for mum. But a few months later down the track, so I wasn't planning to do any palate expansion for her at all. I thought she was quite within normal limits, and we were going to try to use a habit corrector such as MyBrace or Healthy Start. But then her mum actually said with the allergies, she was a little struggling. She was getting more tired. She was getting more restless during breath. So I actually decided I'm going to just do a little bit of expansion for her anyway, just for functional reasons. I'm not shy about doing palate expansion. We did about 5 millimeters, so it is super subtle in these photos. But what we can actually see is that it did open up her bite. Even as the permanent teeth have erupted, the central incisors, the whole bite has actually opened, so the bite is less deep. And what I'm going to do now that she can breathe a little bit easier is to get her to continue with the Healthy Start. And over the time, what we want to see is that bite open up more and more. But I shared this because I think that we're never, ever finished with these children. When we start with the tongue tie release from infancy, we've got to follow them up all throughout the years, and what is it that we can do to help them at every stage. And one of the things that I think that I'm becoming more clued up about is we really cannot underestimate the impact of these allergies. Yeah. And so this is a flow diagram which actually shows us that when we have the maxillary constriction and we have this low tongue posture, it goes into a continuous cycle where we get poor facial development, and this it keeps going. So what we really want to do is we want to try and intervene and break this cycle at every point where possible to normalize the maxillary width and to normalize the tongue posture as young as possible. And so one of the things I really want to thank the Endeavour Group for, meeting every single week over the past year, is for inspiring me to want to do more with younger and younger children. So I had this situation where I was doing tongue tie release. Parents want to know, when can I bring my child back? And I was saying, well, I don't really deal with children until they have problems, usually around the age of 6 to 8 years. And I thought that, you know, nobody in our practice really wanted to see children. But I could see people like Dorothy, Lauren, Carla, Loria, they're really working with children through infancy as pediatric dentists, and they're seeing them regularly. And they're doing everything that they can to educate families. They're very passionate about letting children experience no decay and how can we do early intervention. And so I thought I need to get out of my comfort level and to then start doing earlier and earlier. And so I, for the first time, we've got a dental therapist who looks after their children. And so it means that these infants can come back and see us as our regular home. So this is a little girl. They travel for an hour. They're happy to be with us. And it means that we can identify other opportunities to provide intervention, whether it be early expansion or some sort of myofunctional therapy or exercises. It's really been a big game changer in our practice to have this continuity, and we're actually at the point where I want to look for a second therapist. So in concluding, these are the messages that I'd like to share. I think that it's really important not to overlook the high arch palate, not just in adults, not just in children, but also in adults. We want to normalize the palate structure to ensure good nasal breathing and optimal tongue and airway function. Tongue ties and low tongue posture are associated with narrow high palate and the development of sleep disordered breathing. So these problems are beginning very, very early on in life with the way that the facial structures are growing. And if we can do tongue tie in combination with myofunctional therapy, that can help restore normal rest posture and functional patterns. The ultimate role of the tongue is an upper airway dilator muscle to keep the airway open during sleep. So if there are problems with chewing, swallowing, speech, we know that there will ultimately be problems with the way that the tongue is working during sleep as well. And so what we want to do is we want to optimize both palate structure and the tongue to palate suction as early as possible for optimal growth and development. And not only will this help children grow better and learn better, but it's also going to prevent the huge despair that I see every time I'm dealing with an adult patient. So thanks, everyone.
Fabulous, Shireen. People have so many questions for you, and can't thank you enough for this comprehensive evaluation and the case presentations. And Steve and I both are super excited about all of the work that you're doing to push, dealing with these young people forward and bringing an understanding to what's going on in the airway community for these little people. So we have way more questions than we have time to fill, but there was a few that have come to the top, and I'm just going to start with a couple of them, and then I'm going to let Steve and Howie pull up the rest, which was interesting. A couple of questions that were asked had to do with your talking very early on in the lecture about mandibular advancement devices for some of these patients. And are you not concerned about maxillary retraction effect of those particular devices?
Yeah, I fully think that this is a band-aid solution. It's not a precise option, and that's mm-hmm. why we have so many side effects. And this is why I think it's really key to get to the root of the issue. And I think that in future we'll find that maxillary expansion will be central to helping people, adults, breathe and sleep better. And that's why mm-hmm. we've got to do it early, because it's not always easy to
right.
for adults to adapt.
So it was interesting, one of the things that you said had to do with MMA and dome surgery. And in the same sentence, you actually threw HNS surgery in there at the same time, which is hypoglossal nerve stimulation. And we do know that the patients with narrow, high vaulted arches and soft tissue crowding of their velar pharynx definitely means less effective therapy. So I think it's interesting that we are looking at the scope of sleep surgery as being increased by something other than just skeletal surgery. So do you feel that having options other than comprehensive skeletal surgery is something that's going to work well in the demographic that you'd serve? In other words, not just MMA.
So the question being, are the surgeries effective?
Mm-hmm. MMA and DOM take you to a certain level, but then HNS will take you somewhere else as well. So that's unusual to hear that. So, and at the same time, when you're talking about tongue tie releases in adults, for instance, are you looking at making sure that the maxilla has been expanded enough so that there's room for the tongue to move up?
Yeah, and that was my concern with the adult patient that I first presented, that her mouth is too small. So I am concerned, definitely, that we could aggravate sleep breathing disturbance. And I think Sarush Sagi's work has actually shown that that is a real possibility. So, yes, I am concerned. And that's why I think, why can't we just develop the maxilla in the first place? Why can't we do that during childhood? But what I am finding is that for a lot of these people that are very restrictive, if we do a little bit of the tongue tie release, even though we're not going to get the back of the tongue to lift, that can provide a lot of alleviation of their neck and chronic tensions. So I'm quite open to that as well. But it's super compromised when we're dealing with adults. And that is why I'm so passionate about early intervention.
That's amazing.
I have a question that kind of follows that one from Stevie Tamia. He was wondering if the DOM procedure or other interventions along those sutural lines interfere with respiratory cycles of the cranium. You know, the expansion and contraction of the cranium with respiratory cycles across those sutures. Are you familiar with that? Is that question from Stevie?
I don't know if this is going to answer the question, but I think that the DOM protocol using that Lefort 1 osteotomy, it actually prevents the transmission of forces into areas that isn't required. So effectively making the person like a child again, like their stitches are more open and movable.
I think that'll help. Another question somebody asked about, I think you answered it pretty much, was if you're looking at the very young kid, the 2-year-olds or 3-year-olds, I know we want to treat as early in life as possible, but talk about what you use there. Do you use something like the myomunchies? Do you use myofunctional therapy? If the child has a lower lip sucking habit, those kind of things, how do you work with that?
Okay, with a 2-year-old, what can we do? Well, we want to make sure they're chewing and swallowing properly. So sometimes it may be just referring to a speech and feeding specialist just to optimize things. Yes, I think myomunchie, I'm a big fan of the myomunchie, using it where possible as well. Minimizing dummies, making sure that they can breathe well through their nose. We can't do everything that we want, but even little tongue exercises, I'm trying to incorporate that as we're seeing more and more younger children. What can we do for each little kid? Maybe one little thing, lip pops or little tongue exercises.
Yeah. And you put a lot of emphasis on allergies for these little ones too, because that can certainly influence that. Somebody asked about the research for that. Did you cite a paper about allergies and functional reasons for narrow palates? Did you cite that? I might have missed that in the slide earlier on.
There's a fantastic paper that's actually from Perth in the 1970s. It's published in an ENT journal. I didn't put that one in, but maybe I can add that later. It's 310 consecutive patients with maxillary expansion for functional reasons only, and one of the 6 medical indications was allergies. Even like ear pre-septoplasty, asthma, they did it for these specific reasons. And what's incredible was that it was actually done in my home city, and we still don't do this for children.
You know, it takes so long, and that was in that long ago, and it takes so long to get the message out, doesn't it? So yeah, I really applaud the work that you're doing in your area and across the world to get the message out. That's fantastic. I have to ask you one more question. Howie's back on. He's going to shut us down pretty quick. But you had something on one of your slides that I just have to ask about. What is glute ear?
Oh, gluey is this is my interpretation. It's when we have the accumulation of fluid inside the ear because it's the eustachian tube's not clearing properly.
All right. Thank you. I didn't know if that was one of those Australian things like calling pacifiers dummies.
Yeah.
maybe it is.
It's actually something we use here. It's a term we use here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's all the questions that I have here, Howie and Pat. Shireen did such a great job.
Amazing. Thank you.
Pat and Steve, if you remember, she was a little bit hesitant about doing this.
Oh, I know. When we were talking about it on Endeavor, I don't know if I can do this and blah, blah, blah. People would be interested. It was fantastic.
Well, you talked after Kevin Boyd and Mariana. So that was going to be pretty hard to talk.
No,
yeah, thank you so
much.
What?
They are them and you are you. And you bring a certain presence and a certain expertise to the table that is different. And different is good. So don't worry about comparing yourself to others because as an individual, you need not do that. Mm-hmm. You need not do that.
And the important thing is that nobody's been doing this for so long. I think what you say, you started in 2014, around then?
2011.
They said 10 years.
Bothering you.
But 10 years.
Yeah. And in fact, Dr. Cartinson, he was one of the first lectures in New York that I went to as well. So,
and if your husband didn't snore, none of this would have happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to try to do is when we put this on the webinar, we'll include the version that shows your the videos. We'll put them separate, and then what people wanted was that paper and allergies. We'll be able to send that to anybody who wants that also.
Yeah, and I'm happy for anyone that has any questions or is interested in more to just email me as well.
Okay, that'll be great. So, Pat and Steve, before we say goodnight, tell us a little bit about our conference in September.
It was really good. Sure. So AAPMD, our conference is coming up in September, and, our theme is kind of why go live. Obviously, we all want to connect. We all want to be together. We have collaboration from across the medical and dental spectrums that is going to be available, including an author's corner and a hands-on innovation center, as well as a vendor center there so that people can convene, commune, share case studies, be together, hear these absolutely fantastic keynote speakers that are coming from all over the world to be with us live in Atlanta. And, if there is early discount registration right now, we've extended it. Please continue and join the AAPMD if you have not done so as yet. It's really critical that you join our family so that all of these webinars, like Shireen's, are available to you numerous times at no charge, and we'll go from there. So we can't say enough to all of you to come to the AAPMD in Atlanta, as well as look for our emails and our updates, as well as continue to follow us on the webinars that we have here for you.
That's right. We're going to have, Steve, we're going to have information available in September that you'll be able to take home and use right away. So it's going to be clinically oriented with good science behind it, just like you saw tonight. Because Shireen was talking about things that she does every day, but she backs it up with the good science. That's what our conference does. And so come to Atlanta in September, go home with new skills, go home with more books to read than you'll have time to read. But you'll be able to talk to the authors and really get inspired to make a giant difference in your hometown.
So everybody's toolbox is different. We're going to have something for everybody's toolbox.
And we have a whole breakout session from the Endeavor Group, which features all the wonderful people who have been doing these webinars the second Monday of every month. So make sure you mark your calendar. Second Monday of every month for Endeavor Pediatric Messaging. Great. So Shireen, thank you so much. Your day is just starting. And I'm going to have you back next year. So thank you very much. Good night, Shireen. Good day, Shireen. Good night, yep. Pat and Steve. And I'll see you on the webinar.
Good night, everybody. Don't hesitate to ask your questions. We will get back to you with answers. Great. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see you soon. Bye-bye.